In a couple of seconds, it'll be 5 o'clock here in Salford this Thursday, the 8th. That's right, the 8th of December 2022. How are you? It's the BBG, Richie Allen, with you till 7 o'clock. I've got a terrific guest this hour. I'll be speaking to the journalist Sonia Elijah. She'll be with me in about 25 minutes' time. In hour two, I'll open the Skype and phone lines so that I can speak with you. How does that sound?
Uncensored. Unfiltered. You're listening to Richie Allen on the world's most popular independent news radio show.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, Sonia Elijah is an investigative journalist and broadcaster. She's got a Substack account as well. I'll give you all the details when I introduce Sonia a little bit later this hour. Like I said, about 25 minutes or thereabouts. We'll be talking vaccine injuries, how the MHRA, the regulator, how it came to the decision to approve the jab for children as young as 6 months old. We'll talk about the comments made by Andrew Bridgen, MP, in Parliament at PMQs yesterday, and more. Sonia Elijah, this hour, hour two, you and I can have a chat. If that suits you, it might suit you to have a chat with me. I hope it does anyway. So, a few things going on right now that you might be interested in, you might not be interested in. Anne Sakoulis has been sentenced. Do you remember her? The name Anne Sakoulis. She is a former spook. I say former. Are you ever a former spook? She is the American woman who ran down, who knocked down Harry Dunn, a 19-year-old man, 3.5 years ago or thereabouts, and killed him. She was driving on the wrong side of the road. She went to the Andrea Bocelli School for driving, as far as I understand. And it's been a saga, a terrible thing for the parents of Harry Dunn. Big saga the last 2 to 3 years. There was a failed attempt to extradite the woman to come here. Eventually she surrendered and agreed to be tried for it, but in absentia, as long as she could remain in the United States. She was found guilty of careless driving, or death by careless driving in any case. And the sentencing was today, again done in absentia. She was in the United States. They sentenced her, the judge did, to 8 months in prison, but suspended for 12 months. A bit silly, really, because the woman had no intention of coming back here to be sentenced. So that's doing the rounds of the media. But I think the family are happy. I think terrible time for mum and dad, particularly mum. It's always more difficult on the mum, I think, myself. But yeah. Harry's mum, Charlotte Charles, saying that Sakoulis's failure to attend the sentencing in person is despicable. That's making the news. As is the dropping of the Sussexes documentary, if you want to call it that, on the Netflix platform. That's been everywhere today. I won't be watching it. 3 episodes are dropped today on Netflix. More episodes to come. The royal family didn't understand and the need to protect Meghan, says Harry. Apparently, according to Harry, they saw Meghan's, not harassment, but her coverage by the press to be almost like a rite of passage. Some of the royal family members, presumably his brother and his brother's wife, and presumably some of his uncles, they said, listen, we all went through it. She's just going to have to go through it as well. You know, stiff upper lip, old boy. Tally-ho, what, and all of that. And he said, yeah, but race is motivating a lot of this. And that's the big takeaway from the episodes released thus far. But that isn't important, is it? No, it isn't as important as some of the things we're going to be discussing, you and me. Go to richieallen.co.uk, by the way. If you'd like to leave a comment for the programme, do it there at Comment Life. You don't, that's if you don't want to phone me later on. I've not even dragged out the phone jingle. Do you know why I haven't? Because I'm a bit of an idiot. Can I drag it out now? No. Can I? Probably not. It'll take me a moment to get it. Yes. I was feeling incredibly well prepared until that bloody moment. Listen, at the top of the hour, if you would like to call me, these are the details.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Yes, the Andrea Bocelli Driving School. No refunds whatsoever, apparently. It's 5 minutes past five. What else? Strep A has been linked to the deaths of 15 children across the UK. It was 9, I think, a day or so ago. That might be of some interest to you. Maybe not. I want to kick off with something a bit lighthearted. This caught my ear. I'm so glad I saw this. We need a belly laugh or two, don't we? You and me. Especially at this time of year. You know, it's darker. It's dark in the mornings, it's dark in the evenings. Yes, we're looking forward to Christmas, of course, but it's dark, it's cold. We need a few giggles, and we're not getting them from light entertainment programmes these days, where the comedy is so bloody woke. Nothing is funny anymore. At least I don't think so anyway. But sometimes you get laughs, or you receive your laughs, in the strangest of locations. I was sitting down penning some stuff for the website for tomorrow, when I heard a BBC News report this lunchtime on the BBC News channel, and it made me laugh. Now, it's television, so I've got to walk you through some of the visuals, okay? I find this very funny. Maybe this works better in vision, but I think you'll find it funny too. Let's listen to BBC News presenter. I can't remember her name, it doesn't matter. Have a listen.
To the World Cup now, and FIFA and tournament organisers maintain that everyone is welcome. But there continues to be problems over displaying rainbow-coloured items at stadiums and in public places. The BBC has followed England fan Darth Stiles to get his experiences of being an LGBTQ plus supporter at the tournament.
Wonderful. So the BBC is following Darth Stiles, 26 years of age, to get his experiences of being an LGBTQ plus fan at the tournament. Why can't they just say gay? He's a gay man travelling through Qatar. Let's follow him as he travels through the tournament while attempting to remain true to himself. I've got to do this. This is childish, but I've got to do it. I've got to do it. All right? A little bit of musical accompaniment for Darth and his trip through Qatar. It starts off quite well.
I'm Dars, I'm 26. And we're at the World Cup. Everyone's got their flags, showing their flags. I'm proud to be gay, so I want to have my flag and have my rainbow items to show that.
He's gay. He's 26, he's gay. He's proud to be gay, so he wants to have his rainbow items to show that stuff.
So I flew in yesterday, went to the Netherlands-USA game, made loads of friends. We all went to the fan festival. Had the time of our life.
Today has been amazing.
First impressions from the moments of getting on the plane. It was a beautiful country. Everything's well organised. It's completely different from what I've been told and what I expected. Fans everywhere. I've just met someone from Sudan. I met someone from Uruguay.
Want to change Luis Suarez?
Oh, I would swap with you, but it's my special shirt. Sorry.
Lovely. He's met some Uruguay fans and they've said to him, give us your shirt. But he's got a gay shirt and he said, I can't. It's a special shirt for me. So he wouldn't swap with a Uruguay fan. He carries on.
I'm glad I came here for myself to see it.
Metro, please wait.
So it's currently 7 p.m. right now. We're just about to head on the metro up to the ground. I'm really happy now. I got a message from like a fan embassy and they said, we'll be there to support you to get the flag in.
Come on, England, coming home.
I can watch the sport I love, but also showing that as a gay man, you can come here and support it. So hopefully get there early, find a nice spot, put the flag up in the stadium. It'll encourage people to go.
He's had a fantastic day. He's had a brilliant day. He's met fans. He's spoken to the fan embassy and they're going to try and help him get the rainbow flag into the stadium. It's all going swimmingly for Darth Stiles out there being followed by the BBC. Right? Right? Let's hear a bit more of this.
Wait.
Can
I? What? It all goes tits up because he takes out his rainbow flag just outside the metro station. And this is noticed by some of the Qatari security forces. They're not impressed.
Open this.
What? Open, please.
What is this?
Open.
Why do you want me to open this for?
Open.
They want to open it to see what flag you've got in your bag there, Darth.
Went down to the metro on the platform. About 8 or 9 police officers came to me. And it's like, oh, he's trying to shame me. Oh, can you open up the flag in front of everyone in the station?
need to put that one inside.
It was inside, so why just
put it inside? Yeah, but it was outside a minute ago, and when you saw that they had seen you with your rainbow flag, you stuffed it back into your bag and you ran into the metro. But the Qatari cops are not Inspector Clouseau, you know, they're made of sterner stuff.
Yes, but I was on the street, I'm not on the metro, so why is it a problem? I'm not having it here. Did I take it out here?
Just put it inside.
Thank you very much. Have a good day. Lovely country.
Lovely country, he shouts back at the departing guards as they insist that he put the rainbow flag away.
No, I'm just furious. I'm just annoyed.
He's furious and he's annoyed.
It's like shaming me in front of the station. Like, oh, this guy's carrying a rainbow flag. Let's get it out in front of... Probably about 200 people was there watching me while the police around me.
They've shamed him. 200 people there, and they shamed him by making him take out the flag, the rainbow flag that he's carrying, to announce to the world that he's a gay football fan.
Only time I took it out was upstairs.
So you did take it out then?
It was in the bag. So they must have followed me from upstairs all the way down. That's really shocking.
It's really shocking, he says. Let's see how this concludes. Really shocking. In an Islamic state where Wahhabism reigns supreme, shocking that they would tell you to keep your sexuality to yourself. If brains were Semtex, Darce couldn't blow his nose. Well, he would show them. He would show them, so he would. He'd show them.
I want to get the flag into the stadium more now because I just want to argue against it.
He wants to get the flag into the stadium even more now because he wants to argue against it. He was going to get the flag into the stadium for the England match, come hell or high water. What happened? He emerges after the game.
After Saka scored that third goal, I was like running around, was really excited, tried to get the flag out. And security was like, no, this is not allowed. This is not allowed.
So Bukayo Saka, an Arsenal player, so Darce should have been thrilled, scored a goal. He went to take out the rainbow flag and an official came to him in the stand and said, no, you're not taking that flag out. Put it back where you found it. He's not happy.
So I called and contacted Thomas immediately.
I don't know who Thomas is.
The FIFA officials.
I said FIFA official Thomas, right?
To him, I just want to go home.
I just want to go home now. He contacted Thomas and said, I just want to go home now.
He got me out and he just escorted me back to the buses.
And Thomas escorted him back to the buses outside the stadium.
To see that FIFA are trying to help me and are so against it, it's just a Qatari problem, in my opinion.
It's a Qatari problem.
I was crying with joy and I was crying with anger. So
he was crying with joy and he was crying with anger.
So I'm just emotionally drained.
They would not let him take his flag out of his satchel.
I'm just excited to just get back on the plane tomorrow and go home.
Just wants to go home now on the plane.
But my opinion is still going to stay the same. Don't be afraid to come. Obviously, it's been a dream come true. Seeing the World Cup, seeing England play in the Middle East. Being gay should not stop me from doing that.
What?
Being gay should not stop me from doing that.
What?
Being gay should not stop me from doing that.
But being gay didn't stop you from doing it. You went to the game. You went to the game, Darce. They said, just don't take out that flag. You see, we're Muslims. We're, extremely religious Muslims. And we don't think you should be waving your rainbow flag around. So just don't do that and watch the game. Absolutely fantastic stuff on the BBC. Darce 26. You know, you can't have conversations anymore on the radio. I would love nothing more than to invite that young man on the programme and ask him, seriously, why is it so important for you that the rest of us know about your sexuality, your sexual orientation? Why, Darce? Why is it so important that we know that you're gay? Because I couldn't give an arse, no pun intended. I just don't care, and most people don't care either. And the Qataris have welcomed you to their country. And all they've said is, listen, keep that rainbow stuff to yourself. Just do that. This is our country with our rules. I don't agree with them, Darce. I don't agree with any country that criminalises somebody for their sexuality. Of course I don't. I'm not going to say it, how many gay and lesbian men I've worked with over the years, and they know who I am. But wasn't that wonderful? That's the BBC. We decided to follow an LGBTQ plus person around the tournament to see how he got on. And poor old Dar said, you know, after watching the game, by the way, and seeing his beloved Bukayo Saka score for England.
Being gay should not stop me from doing that.
But it didn't. It didn't stop you. It didn't. You just didn't get to wave around your rainbow flag and say, I'm gay. I'm gay. Over here. I'm gay. I'm LGBTQ plus. We don't care, Darce. We don't give a shite, really. And that's the truth of it, isn't it? This is Thursday's Richie Allen Show. You see, I got it right that time. It is the 8th of December, 2022. I'm the BBG. Coming up shortly, Sonia Elijah for far more serious chat. Really looking forward to that. I saw Sonia on GB News the other day. Very, very, very smart woman and a very good journalist. So we'll talk about the injuries. Hey, look, let me just... It bears playing this again. This is very important, right? Last night after I finished this programme, I went to the living room, as I do. The studio is separate. It's kind of separate now. It's kind of cordoned off. Not really. But the studio room. So I leave it. I go downstairs. And at that point, I upload the afternoon's programme to Podomatic. I will do this later on at 7 o'clock. I do it every evening. It doesn't take too long. About a half an hour. Not even, really. Edit the music out. Top and tail it and get it onto Podomatic, and then it goes to iTunes and everything else. Right, okay. So I'm doing that, and a listener alerted me to an article that had appeared on the Independent, that's the Independent newspaper, on its website, written by a woman called Martina Bett. Martina writes for the Press Association, and the Independent had picked up her article. And her article was basically about the Conservative Party MP Andrew Bridgen. And her article said that Bridgen was being asked to return to Parliament to correct the record. Now I thought to myself, oi, 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 very interesting. Because Bridgen, Andrew Bridgen, as is well known now, today, asked a very important question of Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister, yesterday. He asked about suspending the rollout of the COVID mRNA jabs in light of the fact that they seem to be causing a lot of injury and death. At least there are many reports of injury and death, right? And then he went on to say that the mRNA or the JCVI, I think he said the mRNA, doesn't recommend it for pregnant women and women who are breastfeeding. So the Independent ran a piece yesterday written by Martina Bett where he was chastised, and there were several quotes from MPs chastising him for misinformation. Not about the fact that people are dying and becoming injured after an mRNA jab, but because he was incorrect when he was wrong to say that the jabs are not recommended for breastfeeding women or pregnant women. Martina Bett did not mention in her article the bombshell statement made by Andrew Bridgen yesterday, which was this.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There have been more reported deaths and adverse reactions following mRNA vaccination in 18 months than there has been to every conventional vaccine administered worldwide for the last 50 years.
That's it. That's the bombshell. There have been more reports of death and adverse events in 18 months for mRNA than there were reports of deaths and adverse events for conventional vaccines in the past 50 years. That's the bombshell stuff. Then he went on to talk a little bit about, as I said, the pregnant women and the breastfeeding women, and Sunak's answer was...
Well, Mr. Speaker, let me first say that I believe COVID vaccines are indeed safe and effective.
And then, I'm not going to play it again, and then Sunak went on to say, ultimately, the JCVI makes the decision, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, and then he said, ultimately, the responsibility lies with the parent, is what he said, and he left it at that. Now, what Bridgen said, there's no over-egging, there isn't any sensationalising this. What Bridgen said is pretty bombshell stuff, and you would imagine that one newspaper in the country, or at least one television news programme or radio news programme, would pick up that he said there have been more reports of damage caused by the mRNA in 18 months than damage caused by the conventional jabs in 50 years. There hasn't been a peep today. We're not surprised by that. That isn't... we don't let that one hanging there. There's no need to. This is how it goes. But I'm reticent to be positive. It's not because I'm negative. I like to keep kind of an even... I like to be even-tempered. But there's a part of me is tempted to think that there is a little bit of movement in the dam, that we might be seeing a little bit of dust, a little bit of a crack in the dam, and that at least people who have had the jabs, or one jab or two jab, and others who might be thinking about having a jab, I think we're starting to reach them. And by reach them, I mean we are starting to break through the shadow banning and the banning, and they're starting to come across our programs and our websites. You know, those of us who try to do it properly anyway. And that's a good thing. And the article that was posted on the website yesterday about what Sunak had to say to Bridgen has been viewed tens and tens of thousands of times. You remain hopeful. I mean, the articles I post on the website, they very rarely, very, very rarely get that sort of take-up. They very rarely get that sort of readership, right? But you're kind of hoping that it isn't just the converted who are clicking on that. You're hoping that others are seeing these stories, and it might give them a moment of pause when it comes to the jab. I am a responsible journalist. I will not tell or attempt to tell or to dictate to any man or woman what they should or shouldn't do. What I would always do is, if they ask, I would never force it on anybody. I would never introduce it in the conversation. But if somebody asks, were you jabbed? If I say no, which of course I would say no, if they were to then ask me why, only at that point would I say, well, listen, I believe these things are very dangerous. And I believe evidence is emerging all the time that these things are very, very dangerous. While evidence emerges at the same time that Pfizer and AstraZeneca played fast and loose with the truth when they came to write their own safety data. That's what I would say to people. That's what I've seen. And I'm hoping that it is getting through to people. You know, in the last couple of months, more well-known people, it seems to me, are putting their heads above the parapet to say, hang on a second, something is not great here. And that gives me, you know, a little bit of optimism. More well-known people who it isn't so easy to shadow ban, are saying, well, hang on a second now, this doesn't make too much sense to me. Anyway, Sonia Elijah will be on the programme in a few minutes' time. In fact, in 3 minutes' time. Later on, it's your call. You'll keep us going till 7 o'clock. I'm sure you will. I'm sure you've got plenty to say. Taking us to Sonia, here's Climie Fisher. And Love Changes Everything. I remember meeting Simon Climie in a nightclub many, many years ago. It was great crack. I might tell that story on Christmas Day. This is your Richie Allen Show, the most listened to independent news radio show in the world. Back with Sonia Elijah in a couple of minutes' time. Thursday's programme. Alrighty then, Climie Fisher, Love Changes Everything, 25 minutes past 5 this Thursday. Again, I'll be taking your phone calls and Skype calls a bit later on, round about the top of the hour shortly thereafter. Lots of interest in that already. I'm really delighted that my guest this hour agreed to come on. I'm glad I found her too. I was recommended to check her out and I saw her give a terrific interview on GB News the other day. She's an excellent writer, broadcaster and podcaster. You can find her on Twitter at Sonia_Elijah, and Sonia is spelled Sonia. She's got a Substack site as well, which we'll plug a bit later on. Let's welcome to the show Sonia Elijah. Hi Sonia, I hope you're well. How are you?
Hi Richie, how are you doing?
I'm great, and thanks for giving us your time. I know you're in demand. What did you make of Andrew Bridgen asking the Prime Minister yesterday, or stating to the Prime Minister of this country, that in 18 months, mRNA jabs have been reported, it must be said, reported to cause more death and injury than the conventional jabs have done in 50 years. What was your response to that?
Yes, I mean, bravo to him for bringing that out and speaking that out publicly. It's really a travesty what has gone on. These are not conventional vaccines. This is why I believe we're seeing so many adverse events being reported. They are classified as gene therapy based products. Even the manufacturers themselves, Pfizer, BioNTech and Moderna, classify their products as gene therapeutics. This is in their Securities and Exchange Commission filings. So, and because they are mRNA based as well, I mean, it's just, you're getting these very and obviously encased in these highly toxic lipid nanoparticles, you're getting these really, allergic reactions. Obviously, we know we've got the myocarditis and pericarditis events going on. Across the board, you're seeing increased rise in cancers, in an unusual cancers as well. And it's just so alarming that, Rishi Sunak can say, has the audacity to say that these vaccines are safe and effective. I can tell your audience, Richie, that these products, these injections are far from safe and far from effective.
Sonia, too, the last time I looked at the yellow card data, I think there are reports of just under 2,500 deaths. That on its own, if that's true, is astounding. And it's astounding that somebody wouldn't cry, stop, stop, we've got to stop here. But from reading you and listening to you, I understand that if it says 2,500 reports, people are more likely not to report. I believe it's only a small percentage of people that are likely to report an injury. Is that right?
Yes. So you're correct in understanding that. There was a Harvard study done in 2010, which actually stated that this is to do with VAERS, the American vaccine surveillance system, that only 10% are recorded and reported. Just 10% of the actual numbers are being reported. This was done in a Harvard study back in 2010. So that gives you an inkling of really there's a gross underreporting happening of these adverse events.
Imagine
in answer to the question.
Imagine if it was 2,500 is terrible, but if it might be actually 20,000. And maybe more. You spoke brilliantly, I thought, you've done your research, into the Medicines and Healthcare Regulatory Agency. June Rain heads this up. So this is the watchdog. It's supposed to be out there protecting you and me and everybody else from bad drugs. And we're scratching our heads as to how they could okay or pass the drug, because you're right, it isn't a vaccine, for children as young as 6 months old. How did they come to that decision? What is your understanding?
Yes, so I can speak to that on many different levels. So just to go back now, this past spring, March 2022, June Rain, like you said, she's the chief exec of the MHRA. She said in a presentation at Somerville College in Oxford that the MHRA had moved from being the watchdog to the enabler. And really, what they have just done, that December 6th decision they made, is the epitome of them being the enabler. And the enabler enabling the pharmaceutical industry to reap immense profits from their products. The public need to be aware that the MHRA is a pharmaceutically funded agency. I think it's actually 100% of their funding is by the pharmaceuticals when it comes to the regulation of new medicines, which these products would fall under. So 100% is funded by Big Pharma. And of course, it goes without saying, they are far from independent. They are completely captured. So this speaks to regulatory capture, which actually has gone on with the FDA in America as well. It's the same story we are seeing. So the fact that they've given the green light based on a shoddy trial of 4,500 participants, I had the opportunity over the summer to interview Dr. David Wiseman, who has spoken actually at these FDA meetings, these VRBPAC meetings. And he went into great detail discussing the red flags in this trial. Only 30% of these trial participants actually ended up receiving their third dose. Just to remind everyone, this is a third dose regimen. So you have to ask yourself, why didn't they not receive the third dose? What happened? Were they adverse events after dose one, after dose two? We don't know. in this meeting as well, there are astonishing admissions from the Pfizer VPs who state they don't even know how their vaccine works. This is so unbelievable. They also state they do not know how much vaccine or spike protein is being produced in the cells, where and for how long. This is coming from the manufacturer. They have no idea. And also the vaccine efficacy that they based this trial on was based on tiny numbers. When you look at the sort of aggregate the 6 month to the up to four year age group, you're looking at 3 COVID cases in the vaccine group and 7 in the placebo group. And that's where they're sort of basing their efficacy. But I described in the interview with GB News, I remember talking about, well, if you're looking between dose 1 and dose 2, you actually see negative vaccine efficacy. It goes down to negative 32%, which means that the child is more likely to actually get COVID if they get injected with this product.
This is amazing. Do you think that the fact that the Pfizer execs couldn't explain how the jab works or couldn't explain, you know, the quantities of ingredients in the jabs, do you think the MHRA was aware of that when it made the decision?
You know what? I can't speculate. Yeah. I don't know the ins and outs of what the MHRA themselves, what personally Dame June Rain is aware of, but it's astounding that this is in the public domain. So these meetings are recorded. You can find them on YouTube. They're literally hours and hours long. So they're quite hard to sort of watch. They're literally all day meetings. So I'm sort of giving you the kind of snippets. So really, it's there's been a gross dereliction of duty on behalf of the MHRA. They have not done their job. They absolutely are not the watchdog. They truly are the enabler. And it's at the public's expense, the public health's expense. I mean, it's really shocking.
Let me play, Sonia, let me play a little bit of audio to support what you said. This is a 40-second clip. I've played this quite a bit in the last 18 months. So around about 18 months ago, June Rain, who heads up, as Sonia said, the MHRA, was in front of a parliamentary select committee. It might have been health. And she was asked this question, and you will hear the question and the answer. Sonia, just hang on just 1 second. Have a listen to this, if I can bring it up. Ah, yeah. Sure, if I lifted the correct fader, I might be able to do that. So here we go. This is very important. We should never forget this, the question and the answer.
I wonder if you would mind just explaining to us, for completeness of the evidence that we're gathering, the importance of the role of the MHRA in allowing medical products and devices to come into use.
Our role is to, in a nutshell, enable access. But the evidence that we require is that the benefits outweigh any risks. And therefore, we take every care scientifically and in terms of our robust procedures to ensure that these standards are met.
Yeah, enable access, Sonia.
Yes. Yes, and there's a few things I'm going to talk about. You're absolutely right. They definitely enable access, and the idea of that they're basing it on the benefits outweighing the risks. So, I mean, that is far from true. That is, I would say, that is just really a fraudulent statement there, because we know there are so many documented risks with these products. There is a litany of scientific studies, even meta-analysis studies of all the events and how the increase in the risk of myocarditis after dose 2, this is with the Pfizer vaccine, is really, when it comes to young males, is really prevalent. And also, she talks about robust procedures. I actually, a few months ago, wrote broke a story that should have been picked up on the mainstream media, but it wasn't at all. I had a source leak a European Medicine Agency emails to me. And in these emails, the MHRA are mentioned. And these emails speak to the fact that just before they authorized, they granted emergency use authorization for the Pfizer vaccine. This is back in December 2020. Up till mid-November, they knew that there was a massive degradation of the percentage RNA integrity in the vials of the commercial batches of this vaccine. It was down to, let's say, I think 48% when it should be about 80% in the clinical vials batches. And how they got away with green lighting this product, when they flagged it, this is the EMA, the European Medicine Agency, they flagged it, this is a major objection, you know, the MHRA knew about this, yet they literally lowered the standard of the RNA integrity down to 50%. This is all documented in my report. I've done a two-part report on this. My report was picked up by a MEP, member of European Parliament, Michel Rivasi, at the special committee on COVID there, sort of in the European Parliament, just about a month ago. There was a lot of frenzy on social media about this special committee meeting because Albert Bueller didn't show up. He was supposed to show up. Anyway, so she mentions my report. This is, I wrote it for Trial Site News. And so we know that there was impurity, and they also flagged impurities in the vials that they could see. So we have no way of knowing, well, we do know, we know that at least half, 50%, they allow degraded RNA molecules. That means these mRNA molecules are not intact. They are shortened or truncated, and we have no idea of knowing what the safety implications of that is. And they themselves, in these emails, this is between themselves, these EMA officials, they have no idea of what the safety or efficacy implications of this in regards to this, the quality of the vaccine.
Does that stun you, Sonia? The knowledge that, I mean, we heard a guy called Gerard Rennick, didn't we, in the Australian Federal Parliament, a senator. We heard him lambast his colleagues for not reading documentation and for basically just parroting to their constituents, this stuff is safe, don't worry about it. But they hadn't read anything. Yeah. That's the stunning thing, isn't it? That we know that our MPs have, more than likely, we can't say for a fact, but it looks like it, they haven't read this stuff. I'm sure it has crossed their desks, but they've not read it and taken the chance and said, right, the lazy option maybe to people, they're safe, we can trust them, go and take them. And people have believed it, and it's undoubtedly led to some people becoming injured and others dying. That's the startling thing. I've been in journalism since 1998. It absolutely leaves me cold that they wouldn't read this stuff.
Yes, it is. It's really, I mean, it's just unprecedented what has gone on. They haven't read this, that they haven't. Well, also, and just to let you know, obviously, you must be aware that even the manufacturers themselves, this is Pfizer, Moderna, they don't release their raw data. So we have no idea of what their raw data is. So this is the data they give the regulators is what they have sort of, you know, whitewashed, you know, what they have sort of cleansed. And I've spoken to the whistleblower. I've interviewed Brooke Jackson. You probably know who Brooke Jackson is.
Yeah, so remind our listeners who she is. This is important.
Yeah, so Brooke Jackson is the Ventavia, is a subcontractor of Pfizer, who ran a lot of the trial sites. And Brooke Jackson was one of the directors, I think, for at least three of these sites in America. And she spoke to me about the gross sort of, you know, the dereliction of duty, how the trial was really mismanaged, a lack of data integrity, putting the patient's safety at risk, gross sort of errors. And then I did my own research going through all the thousands of pages of the Pfizer data dump that was released by, you know, FOIA request. This is because the FDA wanted the public to wait until 2096 to release all the documents that they relied on, the clinical and non-clinical documents that they relied on to authorize the EUA back in December 2020, but it was thankfully released by court order. I got my hands on it. I've read thousands of these pages, and I myself have come up. I found a third death that was never reported in the pivotal New England of Journal Medicine study that was published. This is before their cutoff date. You know, I happened to just come across another person that had died. Gross errors, anomalies. I went through a lot of these case report forms, and I found comments and narratives where you have the trial investigator, where you have the someone's oncologist, a woman's oncologist, saying the product, this Pfizer product, is responsible for this woman's cancer. And the trial investigator concurring with the oncologist, but Pfizer saying it did not concur. And that is throughout these, I found a lot of those case report forms. This is in the Pfizer documents.
That's blatant fraud, isn't it? It's any fraud, way you want to call
malfeasance,
it.
Malfeasance, you know, I would say it's malfeasance. And it's just, yes, it's fraudulent. It hasn't been picked up because there are not many people that are willing to sort of wade through all these documents. But do you think why should I, as a, I guess, a citizen journalist, I'm doing this, you know, you're doing it. So, but why aren't the regulators going through all these documents?
It's horrible. It's horrible. Like I don't quite feel your pain because I've never written, but I know, speaking to Jackie Devoy and other journalists, James Dellingpole, I know the horrors of having this information and you can't get the Telegraph, the Times, the Daily Mail to pick it up. We're speaking with Sonia Elijah. You'll find Sonia on Twitter at Sonia_Elijah. That's S-O-N-I-A. There you will find links to Trial Site News. You'll find links to the Sonia Elijah podcast. She's an investigative journalist. So here's the thing then. You won't be surprised. Lots and lots of comments on the website about this from our listeners. Here's the thing that I can't really get my head around. My listeners won't believe this. They'll say, oh, Richie, you do have opinions. I can't get my head around. So we know that they did what these pharmaceutical companies have been doing for decades now. They played fast and loose with the truth in the trials. They get their dodgy product passed by regulators which are hardly independent. The media, and some people say, well, the media is blind to this because they get so much money in advertising revenue from Big Pharma. That's what some people will say. All of this is going on. It is killing some people. It is causing catastrophic injuries to other people. And I've gotten to this stage in my life now, Sonia, where I'm wondering, is that really what it's all about? Is it fraud? Is it not fraud? Is it greed? Is it money? Or is there something more sinister going on? And that's a question that's keeping me up at nights. You know, is there something else going on? Because the internet's an amazing place and you get all sorts of comments from people. People who get in touch with this program. Ah, Richie, it's depopulation. Ah, Richie, it's technocratic future society they want to build. It's a surveillance state they want to build. Where are you on why this is happening? Is it simply bad practice by the media and by politicians or something else, Sonia?
I mean, obviously, we can speculate until the cows come home. I mean, it's sort of like I try not to go down too many rabbit holes. I just like to try and keep as focused as possible on doing my reports. But I do see the idea of this rise of this sort of digital, you know, we've got the whole digital ID coming through. We'll see with digital currency. It's sort of, you know, COVID did. You know, some people do believe COVID was the cover to usher in the sort of vaccine passports, and that go, you know, speaks wider to the whole digital ID that's tied in with that. So there's that on one level. But just going back to the product of these mRNA injections, so we know that Moderna for years, I mean, it was founded in the early 2000s, it couldn't get a product through, it couldn't get it authorized until COVID came along. Right? They couldn't authorize their mRNA products. So this is the first time these mRNA-based, I don't know if you call them medicines, but whatever, products have been authorized, have been allowed under emergency use authorization. And they came on the scene in the pretext that there was no other treatment for COVID. We know, and I've extensively researched on early COVID-19 treatment like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. There are other treatments out there that exist, but the pretext of the EUA was that there were no other treatments available. And that's how they sort of got ushered in and railroaded through, that vaccines were the only way out of the pandemic. And they kept sort of reiterating that. But we know that these trials that were done, sadly, I mean, we've got many trials that show it was very successful and effective, these other generic, which haven't been patented, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. But the bigger trials were funded by mainly the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and other companies with vested interests in the pharmaceutical industry. And lo and behold, the results from those trials always showed that there's no clinical significant, they're not significantly beneficial for COVID. And that's time and time again, you found that. And I've written many reports on these. This is like the Together trial. That's just naming one of these big, big trials. And it's just really appalling that you have this suppression, this clamping down on any other early COVID-19 treatment, because, you know, we know that Pfizer, for one, has made billions on these products. I mean, it's just skyrocketing profits.
Billions and with no risk whatsoever of litigation because the government's indemnified them.
I've also looked at the Pfizer contracts. So you can, I mean, I've written on this as well. I've looked at these. They are, like you said, they have indemnity. And the countries that sign these contracts, they take on the indemnity. So when they do, well, like, for example, the UK, we know there's a payout scheme for people that have been injured. It's coming from the UK taxpayer. It's not coming from the pharmaceutical company. It's outrageous. And also what's stipulated in these contracts, these sort of predatory contracts, I would call them, and they are unconscionable, is that the countries cannot independently test the vials of these products. It's illegal. They cannot do that. And you have to ask yourself why
if you had nothing to hide or if you weren't scared of anything. Sonia Elijah is our guest. I'll tell you something that I've noticed in recent years, and this goes back before COVID. A few years ago, I was talking to a GP on this programme, and she said, her name will come to me in a moment. She said, Richie, I'm getting a bit concerned about a movement in medicine, not just in British medicine, but in global medicine. They're talking about a movement away from treatment and a movement towards prevention. And she said, that sounds wonderful. I mean, you would imagine that's how medicine should be anyway. Make sure you don't get sick and then you won't need medicine. But she said to me, it isn't as straightforward as that. What they mean is they've got lots and lots of different vaccines in development. Vaccines against obesity, vaccines against cancers and stuff like that. And she said, I'm very concerned about that, because that's not the sort of prevention that, you know, GPs would have talked about for decades and decades and decades. You know, we would have talked about getting out and trying to get a bit of fresh air, getting up by the seaside if you can, eating good greens, vegetables, getting your vitamins and whatnot. But she said, this is kind of sinister. And we've seen this now in the last couple of years. They're talking, they've got all sorts of mRNA jabs in development for any illness you can think of. And they're going to start pushing these things in the next 2 to 3 years pretty hard, I think, on the population to say, look, we don't have the capacities in the NHS. We don't have the capacities in the health system, the service in Ireland. In America, we're struggling, but we've got these jabs. I see us moving to that pretty soon. And do you know what my concern is, Sonia? My concern is that this will start to kind of move in on our civil liberties, in terms of that if we don't agree to take these things that will stop us getting cancers and stop us getting obese and whatnot, that it might mean that certain privileges are denied to us. Now, that again sounds like crazy conspiracy theory, but they talked about this only last year with the COVID jabs. they talked, didn't they? So what do you think of that, moving towards prevention rather than treatment, which sounds lovely, but in reality, it might be a bit more sinister.
Yes, I mean, these mRNA-based, you know, treatments up until COVID, none of it was they were not able to get them authorized. So because they were so risky, so dangerous, they were just not successful. And I mean, going back to the mRNA, just the science of it, I mean, you know, you're talking about these are modified mRNA. It's not natural messenger RNA you find in your body. These are modified. They are then encapsulated in lipid nanoparticles. Now, we know with the Pfizer and Moderna, two of those compounds in the lipid nanoparticles are completely novel and they are highly toxic. One is made with PEG, polyethylene glycol, and the other one is a cationic lipid, and which is again highly toxic. There's scientific literature, you know, speaking about this. These are being injected into people's bodies. I mean, and no wonder we're seeing a lot of anaphylaxis going on, which is an extreme allergic reaction, and sudden death. So these are being now injected into babies as young as 6 months old. I mean, literally, that's what the MHRA have given the green light to.
Sonia, do you know what? I'm praying. I don't know what I believe in, but I'm holding on to this idea that only a very small number of parents will think it appropriate to give the jab to babies as young as that. Do you have that optimism? I can't imagine too many who are thinking it's a good idea.
Yes, because I know, because I do a lot of work, you know, a lot of my reporting is also based on what's going on in the States. And I've interviewed a lot of scientists there and also even, you know, Dr. Robert Malone. And finding is that a lot of many parents are not getting their young children, putting them up for these jabs. They're finding a big decline. So I'm hoping that that will translate here as well, that you won't have parents rushing to get their young children jabbed. And I think what has helped is that you can't hide the fact that they're not effective, first of all. I mean, we talked a lot about safety, but also just on efficacy. The trial themselves, this is the Pfizer trial, was never designed to test whether or not it prevented transmission. This was known from as early as October 2020. It's been written about in the British Medical Journal, written by Peter Doshi. He's a senior editor there. We knew about this from October 2020. So we know it doesn't reduce. So they never even designed it to test whether it can prevent transmission. We know that the efficacy wanes drastically. That's why you have to take multiple doses. I mean, again, that's a very unusual thing, that for these are immunizations where you have to take a jab every couple of weeks, you know, between dose one and dose two is 3 weeks. Then you wait another 8 weeks to get your third jab. So it's like, what is this? And then every season, you know, come autumn, oh, time for your booster. I mean, I think people are reluctant to become human pincushions at this point.
We, in my own circle, and I like to think over the years I've built up a level of trust with my listeners. I do not lie. I just will not. I have never, and I will not do it. In my own circle, there is a lady called Ruth. I live near Media City in Salford and also near Buell Hill Park. Lovely lady, would have balked at the idea that she would ever be listening to a radio show like this. Never heard of, you know, independent media, none of that. Took the jabs, I think, too. She's in a very bad way now with blood cell count, white blood cell count, and she's very sick, and she's been told she's going to get sicker. My other half, Sonia, is French. Her mum is only in her early 70s, before the COVID jabs, a fantastically healthy lady, a cyclist, and she's had, a pretty serious cardiac issue since having the jabs. Those are two people I know of. And when I speak to people, I meet a lot of people around here. They're unaware of what it is I do, and I ask questions. I'm not the one, you know, telling it as it is. I don't speak very much. I listen. Yeah, and I hear it. Yeah, I hear it from people. I heard it from a lady recently saying to me, I had the second one, but I was so sick after it, I'm definitely not having the third one. And I think to myself, inwardly, I kind of shout yes, but I don't say too much kind of a thing. What about yourself in your own circle of friends and family and extended family? Have you seen any issues with it?
I mean, no, thankfully, because thank I God. Think we're sort of all on the same page. You know, I think we were just skeptical kind of from the beginning and just wanted to see how things would play out. But no, I mean, thankfully, not in my immediate family, but it's just shocking. But obviously friends and other, you know, acquaintances as well, and just people, you know, and friends of friends. I mean, it's just sudden deaths and it's really, or like you said, cardiac issues. It's so sad. I mean, people going blind, it affects vision as well. It's just really, it's so sad. It's really so sad when you really stop. I have to slightly desensitize myself because I do so much research. And if I really, you know, was just to get so overcome with emotion, then I wouldn't be able to do, you know, my job.
I hear you. Do you make sure, we'll finish up in a couple of minutes. Do you make sure, or do you ensure, I should say, that you have time away from it, that you just stop? Because when you're as embedded in it and, you know, unearthing stuff and writing stuff, it can get you down. I mean, I had a minor, I shouldn't say it because I didn't really, and I don't want to minimise the struggles of others, but back in November of last year, 2021, I hit the wall, to be honest. It just got so, it's so rotten knowing that it's going on and that it could stop, Sonia, so quickly. Yeah. Do you find that you must give yourself that time away from it?
Yes, it's important to take breaks. I don't write constantly or read constantly, and I force myself to take breaks. But I am writing a book at the moment. I'm trying to compile all my investigations together and doing more extensive research. So that's also taking a lot of my time. Yeah. It is important to have a balance in your life. And also, I'm kind of a naturally optimistic person. I'm sort of like a half glass full as opposed to a half glass empty type. So, and I feel that because it's been so egregious what's happened, and so sort of you can't sweep this under the rug anymore, I think more and more people are waking up. This is what I like to think, which I do feel the sense that people are being a bit more skeptical. They're more sort of when the BBC says, you know, so maybe they're more sort of likely to question because they're finding the hard way, obviously finding out the hard way that, you know what, these claims of, you know, take this and it's great for you and just do what the government says is sort of maybe backfiring and not panning out well for people. So I think people are waking up more and more, I like to think.
Great stuff, Sonia. Thanks for your time today, folks. You'll find Sonia on Twitter. Okay, it's @Sonia_Elijah, and you'll find a link tree to the sites where she publishes and to her podcast. Have a great weekend, Sonia, and I hope we do it again. Thank you.
Thank you, Richie. Take care. Thanks.
Thank you. Sonia Elijah on The Richie Allen Show. It's exactly, it's coming up for a minute past six. Great to have Sonia on the programme. Lots and lots of comments on that. We will get to them, a few of them, and I will take your phone calls shortly. How about that?
Cold, seasonal, flu and respiratory diseases. We all get them. Never before have your body's defences been under such constant attack. Now more than ever, it's essential to have a robust immune system. Inspired by the Zelenko Protocol, ImmuneX 365 is a unique formulation that combines effective levels of vitamins D3, C and K2, as well as zinc and quercetin. ImmuneX 365 has been specifically formulated to maximise the effect of each ingredient, giving your immune system an optimum boost. Take back your health with just 2 capsules of ImmuneX 365 every day. UK listeners of The Richie Allen Show can use their special 15% discount code RichieAllen365 at checkout. Go to ImmuneX365.co.uk to get yours now. Now with 2-day track delivery free.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. This is your Richie Allen Show, live from the magnificent city of Salford.
Welcome back and thanks for staying with me. Thursday's programme, nearly 2 minutes past the hour of 6 o'clock. Thanks for all of your messages. They are legion. A number of you are reaching me via Twitter as well. I'm going to stick with the comment live. You know, Twitter booted me off 18 months ago and only recently unlocked the thing. I like the fact that we can have a chat during the programme on my website as opposed to Twitter. So I'd prefer if you used Comment Live for the comments, and I'm going to carry on like that, because I don't imagine, and I could be wrong, but I don't imagine the Twitter account is going to last for very long anyway. It's a bit of fun at the moment, but I don't think it will. Rob says, Richie, I know two guys from work in their 60s. Now both have the same cancer. It's blood cancer, and it has wrecked their immune system. They must get stem cell treatment. They developed it within the last 18 months, says Rob. Other people I know also know others. So there's a group of people who know about others with blood cancers, which have been diagnosed since they had the injections. And that's a good message, Rob, because we don't know ultimately. But you have to wonder. And you're very right to wonder, I think. Scaramouche says there was a report on Sanity 4 Sweden. Is that a TV channel in Sweden? And it says a tweet by UK celebrity TV doctor Malhotra, who wrote that journalists and TV broadcasters who go to him for medical advice say they will not be taking any more vaccines. Is that Asim Malhotra, is it by any chance? I've come across him once or twice. He's alleging that certain celebrities come to him and they are saying they won't have any more jabs. Fair enough, that is interesting. 3.5 minutes past the hour. I'll take your calls in a few minutes, and Skype or telephone. Skype obviously won't cost you anything because you pay for your internet anyway. The telephone might cost you depending on where you're calling me from, but this is the contact stuff.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's +44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Yeah, I turned my mic down. Faisal says, how many doctors will be railroaded by other doctors into allowing this jab for their... Or how many parents will be railroaded by doctors? How many parents, I think you meant, Faisal, will be railroaded by doctors into allowing this jab, into giving this jab to their babies, along with all the other jabs, which are given as routine, without further explanation. That's a good point. So on the one hand, I'm optimistic. I'm thinking, you know, maybe a lot of parents will say... No thanks, the child is 6 months old, the child is only two, the child is only three or four, he or she doesn't need it. I'm optimistic about that. Faisal is saying, well, hang on there, Baldy. Isn't it possible that doctors will railroad people into it? Maybe. There you go. Look, there's lots and lots and lots and lots of messages. Read them by going to Comment Live. I'm going to take a tune now. Here's the tune. When I come back, I'm taking your calls. It's Chat with Richie on Skype. It is 0161 818 2018. That's 0161 818 2018. Yeah. If you're calling from overseas, it's +44 161 818 2018. But it's best if you use the Skype thingamajig. It's me and you then till the top of the hour.
Yeah.
Get calling. Here's George Baker selection, Little Green Bag. Let's cut the music then, because the calls are coming in straight to the telephone. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with? You're live. Hello. Hi there, who am I speaking with?
Hiya, Richie. I wasn't sure I'd get through so quickly, actually. It's Dean from Leyland in Lancashire.
How you doing, Dean? Welcome, buddy.
Very well, thanks. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Are you cold? It's Brass Monkeys, isn't it, at the moment, up here?
Yeah, it should be, though, shouldn't it, really?
Yeah, it should be, absolutely, yeah. Why are we complaining? It never gets worse than this, -3, -4. As long as the footpaths are not icy, I don't mind. Good to have you on, Dean, pal. Welcome, you're very welcome. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I'm basically just ringing about the conversation previously about the alleged vaccines, etc. Basically, what I really wanted to say is a lot of people seem to be sort of going down this rabbit hole of various things and being led at, you know, these red herrings and so on. So I've cut to the chase. In my opinion, I know it's been said by many other people, is that first of all, I don't think this SARS-CoV-2 virus exists at all. I don't think anybody's actually died of what everybody describes as COVID.
Yeah.
And so this alleged vaccine is totally useless, as in fighting against an illness, a contagious illness.
That you don't think exists.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. I'm wide open to that. I do argue with people who say sometimes it's never been isolated because that's not something they can prove. It's something they believe. I am more open. This sounds like I'm a hypocrite. I'm not a hypocrite. I'm more open-minded to the idea that it doesn't actually exist. I'm not saying I believe that, but I'm open-minded to it. I mean, they've done worse than invent a fake virus, Dean. I'll give you that, mate. So yeah, I'm open to that.
Well, I think what people need to do is just look at what's actually going on around them. If you go back, you know, it's approximately 3 years since this thing entered the world.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was March of 2020 for this country primarily. And you look around and you start to look at what the figures are for the deaths and so on, whether you know anybody who's actually got this alleged COVID. I don't personally know of anybody. I know of people who've had a test and tested positive for it, people who've been asymptomatic with the test. I don't know of anybody who's actually seriously been ill with anything as regards to what they describe as the symptoms. I've never been vaccinated with these, again, alleged vaccines. I've just continued life as normal, not done any social distancing, not worn any masks. So if we've got it, what they purport to be a very serious contagious virus, then why have I not caught it? Why has nobody that I know have actually caught this thing? Lots of members of my family have done exactly the same as I've done, continued life as normal, and nobody's picked anything up. And the reason is because there's nothing to actually pick up. All they've used in the very first instance is they've actually used what is the common cold, which, when you think about it, the common cold, it's common for a reason. Everybody has those symptoms. Nobody actually knows what the common cold is because for the centuries, nobody's come up with a cure for the common cold. And yet, they can come up with something to fight against a virus, which, again, nobody, going back to what you said as regards to isolation and purification, that has never been done. And yet, they can come up with something which actually so-called works. It is being effective. Not effective against a contagious disease, but it's being effective in the fact that it's actually injuring people and actually killing people. So coming back to the point, I don't know of anybody who's had COVID. I do know people who have died after being injected, and I do know people who have had serious injury after being injected.
And
yeah.
On the whole testing thing, I haven't mentioned this for a while, and maybe if there are people listening to this programme, for the first time, the person who came up with the idea for PCR testing, a guy called Carey Mullis, went on the record to say that the PCR test was pretty much unsuitable for detecting viruses or viral loads and stuff like that. And this is the guy who invented it. I mean, that's obviously very serious. When the guy who invents it says, don't use it to find COVID or anything else because it's not very good, and yet they persisted with it. And every time they said somebody had COVID, it was because of one of these PCR tests. So I can't argue, Dean.
Two things, Richie, as regards to the test. Back in 2020, I did some research into, first of all, I was totally suspicious of this from the very first day. And so what I did some research into what are the normal death figures for pneumonia and for flu. And I looked what those figures were. And the figures at the time, which they were giving out on the news bulletins, were actually much lower than a typical average year for those two illnesses. So that was the first thing that I did. I also then looked into the PCR test and I downloaded the instruction leaflets, which are the PDFs, with what were the PCR tests at that time before they became a widespread thing. And one of the first things it said, on I think on the second or third page of the PDF, it said not to be used for diagnostic purposes, for scientific experimentation only.
And well said. Well said. And you know, I remember the guitar player for Queen asking a great question. Now, this had occurred to you, it had occurred to me, but it was lovely when somebody's so famous. He asked the question, and of course, Brian is an astrophysicist. He said, how can they tell which variant you have? They haven't adapted the tests. And of course, that's a massive thing. That's a big deal, that, you know, that people would go and use the same PCR test that they used for SARS-CoV-2, the original COVID-19, and then they would go to the doctor and the doctor would say, oh yeah, you have Omicron. But How could you know?
Yes, but it's all been part of the con and the red herring.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, again, if you look at viruses, I, like most people, thought that viruses were a living entity, that they were organic. Now, when I've looked into, and I've done extensive research and looked at lots of different things over the past 3 years, it appears to be, in my opinion, and many other people's opinions, people who are a lot more qualified than I am, to say that they are not organic. Now, if they're not organic, how do they have a genetic code?
How could they evolve?
So if you haven't got a genetic code, the PCR test is looking for a genetic code. So if the virus is not organic, it will not have a genetic code.
I'm with you. And of course, the problem we have is nobody pushing this agenda. None of the stage scientists, none of the doctors they roll out to speak on Sky or the BBC, they're never going to be asked any of these questions.
No, they don't do. But the problem is most people, when they start to consider this and they start to question it, they put it down to it's all to do with money and to do with monetary reward.
Yeah.
Now, in my opinion, again, the money's just there as a sweetener to keep all those people doing the chores and the tasks and the role that they're set to do. The money, as we know, they can print, well, they don't even have to print money, it's just literally numbers on a computer screen.
Yeah.
Money can appear in your account. So money isn't really an issue. Money's just there to actually oil the cogs of the engine. So if you go down, again, the red herring to say it's all to do with money, it's not. So coming back to what I was saying it.
No, but can I just stop you there 1 second? I totally agree with the point you just made. But at least if people are starting to think that this is a load of bollocks, even if they think it's only a load of bollocks because it's about profit, well, at least they've started their journey, right? I mean, if we can get people to think about that, that's a good point. I think you've opened up something there. Speaking to people...
It is the fact that things are seem to be changing, but the problem is that a lot of people have had 1, 2, 3 or more of these.
At this stage, yeah.
The people that I know, even though from the very outset, I warned as many people as possible, nobody in my immediate family, I've got two grown-up daughters, I've got 5 grandchildren, and all of my family, my nuclear family, haven't been anywhere near these things.
That's brilliant.
I've got a best friend, and he's done the same thing with his. But people, unfortunately, people have ignored what we've said, and they've literally gone off and done something with all good intention. But unfortunately, in my opinion, again, it's only my opinion, nobody's going to be in touch by the damage that these things are going to cause. I've got 2 daughters who have, in my opinion, again, have been vaccine damaged when I was ignorant to what things were in the past, and they've had to suffer consequences from that. Now that I'm wiser, older, and I've done more research, all vaccines, again, in my opinion, are very, very dangerous. Because if you look into it, that no vaccine actually has been proven, again, from research that I've done, no vaccine of any description has been proven to work, but vaccines have been shown to cause damage and death.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do now. I'll tell you what I'm going to do now.
Controversial what I'm saying.
Yeah. Can I interject? What I'm not going to do now, again, I'm interjecting because I know there are people listening to this and they are pretty new to programs like this. So I will say to them, ordinarily, I would put the other side of that to Dean, and I would say that there are thousands of doctors, hundreds of thousands around the world who will say that polio jabs were brilliant, that measles jabs were brilliant. And I would do that, and I would have a big argument with Dean. Not a big argument, but I would back and forth. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to point out in a one sentence thing, there are other people who see it differently, and they see that vaccines have played some positive role in modern medicine. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say it again.
But if we look again, you use the term modern medicine, if we look at the history of modern medicine, the modern medicine actually runs and controls, if you look into it, you know, in the minutiae of everything, is they run and control the medical establishment that we depend on and we have trust and faith in. And when you look at the connections that the pharmaceutical industry are controlling on so many levels, you look at all the sweeteners that the doctors are given through prescribing various drugs and so forth. I mean, at one time, I don't go to the doctors. I haven't been for a long, long time. But anybody you know goes to the doctor, they're only happy if they come out with a prescription.
We've been conditioned to be like that, haven't we?
Yeah. Because yeah, that's what I'm saying. Everybody's conditioned, but at the same time, they're incentivized, coming back to the money. They're oiling, you know, the wheels of the machine with the money again to incentivize all the medical establishment to dish out all these drugs of all descriptions. I think what the problem is that people need to realize the situation that we're in, because the medical establishment themselves, because of the connections with the pharmaceutical industry, they're not actually looking as to what actually causes illnesses.
No.
And so we need to start to look at what the true, instead of funding the medical establishment and the research scientists via the pharmaceutical companies, we need to do it in a completely different way, to fund it in a different way, so that there's no connection with the pharmaceutical companies.
And don't forget, Dean, some years ago, I interviewed the lady actually recently on the show, lovely woman called Sandy Edwards. Sandy took part in, thus far, the only proper trial into energy healing or complementary healing in the NHS. And it not only did it, what was it, you know, to the doctors, to the clinicians, they saw it working. They saw it actually working. They testified that this is working. Energy healing is a good thing. And Sandy wrote a book about it. But it was dropped. It was dropped like a hot potato. Nobody touched it ever again. There was no follow-up done.
Yeah.
Energy healing works. I've had recent experience of it.
I agree entirely with that.
Yeah.
But the problem is, it's like they tell you on all the various, you know, again, propaganda charity adverts that one in two people are going to end up with cancer. And they're quite confident with those figures. And the reality of it is that those figures are correct. And those figures are correct because of, in my opinion, because of these poisons that people have been put into their bodies.
The food, the water.
I have two daughters who have been affected by that. And again, it's something that if I'd have known then what I know now, I would never let them have the injections.
But you can't beat yourself up about that. I'm guessing that they got a schedule of jabs when they were very young, did they? Yeah.
Like everybody has.
Like everybody.
And so how can they be so confident that one in two people, I mean, those figures are totally accurate for my family. You know, we've got two children, we're now grown up children, and my wife and I, at this moment in time, don't have cancer, but they do. And they both got it within months of each other.
And how, do you mind me asking, are they going to be okay?
Well, we don't know. We honestly don't know, do we? You know, because the problem is, once you're in that situation and your child is in that, even though they're adults, but the children of ours, is you've actually got to, you've no choice at that time other than to go along with the medical establishment.
Yeah, that's right.
Even though you can advise them differently, because I'm not qualified to give them any other advice other than, you know, what my gut feeling is. And the problem is, you've got to go along with that. And so they're having to go through all the chemotherapy, radiotherapy treatments and so on and so forth, which, again, are all damaging to the body. And they're still ongoing with these treatments. And you've got to have faith in them. And so to answer your question, is everything okay? I honestly don't know.
You don't know.
I just put my faith in the fact that they will be okay. And that's the only way I can look at it. But knowing, if I knew then what I know now, I would never have gone down that.
Yeah, but I don't know you now at all. I'm delighted to meet you today. I really mean that, by the way. But
yeah.
It sounds like you're beating yourself up about that. You can't do that, Dean. I mean, listen, if Caroline and myself had children in Ireland in the early 2000s, or even possibly even in Manchester in the mid 2000s, they'd probably have been jabbed, Dean. So you can't allow that to fester. You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't know. If you had known, you wouldn't have done it. But you've got to leave that to one side.
My point is that people have got to really start to look into these things rather than just take it on face value. Rather than just because somebody's got a stethoscope and a white coat on, to believe everything they say. Because unfortunately, everything that they say has been indoctrinated in them through a medical establishment that's really been funded by the pharmaceutical companies. And if everybody's well all the time, then they don't sell their drugs, do they?
My old family doctor told me, I think I've told this story too many times on the radio, but once I got into radio, you know, I said that, you know, if me and the missus had a child, we probably would have gotten them jabbed. We would have done. But I do remember on saying that before I met the future missus, my family doctor said to me, the scandal about mRNA jabs and autism was in the news, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And my family doctor, who was a pretty senior lady at that stage, she said to me, I don't understand the logic in giving jabs for measles and rubella to children. It's good that they get these things and they get them out of their systems and they kind of grow strong. That was her take on it. And also when I was younger, I struggled a lot with bronchial issues, and getting an antibiotic out of that doctor was next to impossible. She just wouldn't have it. Yeah. She wouldn't give them out. And also, to her total credit, when patients didn't have the money, she wrote it off. She didn't care. Like, if patients couldn't afford it, the fee, she was a private doctor. She didn't go looking for the money. So an amazing woman. So she thought at the time that it was a bit silly. I don't think she thought it was dangerous, but she thought it was silly to be giving every child a measles jab because, well, aren't they better off to get the measles and get over it and then have a strong immune system? So, but we didn't know any better, Dean. We knew no better, and I don't think you did anything wrong.
But again, Richie, I think, you know, coming back to the immune system, people need to start to question what actually is the immune system. If you start to look at whether these so-called pathogenic contagions actually exist and actually do what the medical establishment purports to what they do, then the immune system, first of all, I don't think that they do. There is a contagion problem, and I don't think that, you know, exactly as they say, the immune system does what it does. I just think the immune system is your body keeping your body in fine tune and balancing things and sort of negating any effects of toxins that may be around, whether they be, we're surrounded literally by toxins all the time. And I think that that's basically what the immune system is, because if you think of, when you talk about children, they said they acquire immunity as they come into contact with things throughout their life. So based on that principle, the longer you live, the more things you've been in contact with, the greater and stronger your immune system should be. So why is it then, going back to the COVID thing, and the older people say, okay, the older people, they're the ones who are going to be more susceptible to it. But if you go back to their theory, which I've just described, where you build up immunity over time, then they should have the superior immune system.
You would have thought so, yeah.
So again, that doesn't make any sense. So when you start to boil things down to things that you see, going back to what I said earlier, what you've actually witnessed, you know, within your own family and, you know, friends, etc., has anybody actually been ill with this? And then you see, has anybody been ill or had any problems with vaccines, and particularly this vaccine? People will know of people. And so you start to question the very basics of it. And then once people start to look that way, you can start to question everything and say, OK, do we need then to start to look at what the medical establishment is? And really, should it be funded in a different way to do proper research? Because like you say, as regards to the lady you referred to earlier with energy and so forth, why did that not go further? And if it's been shown to be something which is a positive thing.
Because I would imagine quite a significant amount of money was spent to make sure it didn't go any further. Dean, I'm going to take another call. Can I ask?
Good to speak to you,
Richard. No, it's a pleasure.
I listen to you every night, by the way. Well, I wasn't sure I was going to get through to you when I called, but I enjoy it every night, listen to it every night. And I have done for certainly throughout this COVID situation. And keep doing what you do. It's great.
Thanks very much. And listen, all the very best now with your daughters.
Yeah. Thanks, Richie, and have a good Christmas.
You too, Dean. Merry Christmas to you too and to your family. Dean there in Lancashire on Thursday's Richie Allen Show. I've got Julia in a minute. Hang on there, Julia. I'll get to you in a moment. I kept Dean on because that was excellent at the expense of other calls. I know, mea culpa, but that was excellent. I didn't want to cut him off. Caller, welcome to the programme. You're live. Who am I speaking with?
Martin from Edinburgh.
Matt from Edinburgh. Welcome, Matt. Or is it Martin?
No, Martin.
Martin, you're very welcome. How are you? Welcome to the programme.
Oh, wow. Brilliant. Well, it's a bit off topic, really, what I wanted to call you about. I've been meaning to say this for a while. But, I'm 60 years old, so I've been into the truth movement for a long time. That I've studied people from David Icke and Jordan Maxwell and Bill Cooper for many years. And then I came across a few years ago, maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, this flat earth thing. And I just ignored it because I thought it was so silly. I thought, no, I'm not looking into that. It's just silly. I've got enough research to do on other theories. And so I spent a year went by, and I thought, no, I've got to go and I've got to look at this. I've got to debunk it because it just sounds so stupid. And then so I looked into it, and it didn't take me long to actually come across information on it. And I thought, well, I can't actually deny this information. I have to look into it even more, so I researched it more. And I was wondering, because you, in particular, as a radio host, are great at bringing people onto your show that you don't perhaps agree with everything they say. You're one of the few radio hosts that do that. I was thinking, wouldn't it be great if you could get one of these alleged flat earth experts on?
For a natter, as it were. Yeah.
For a natter.
Because you've put it to me, Martin, I don't have any choice. I've got to say yes now. Do you know what it is? I've never really gone near it. And you know when you don't go near something, it leads to some people thinking that you're scared to go near it.
I've
never been scared to go near anything.
I've never been near it for a year.
Yeah, the reason I've not touched it as such is because in light of everything that's going on, and the things we're facing up to, this technocratic agenda, I don't know what use I know several names of people who have looked into this for years and they've got big followings, and I could bring them on.
Eric Cobain, for instance.
Yes, exactly. There's one, and could chat to them about it. But ultimately, I suppose, look, I'm open to everything, and if listeners want to hear a discussion about something, I'll always facilitate it. But it's not something that I've been really interested in myself.
Yeah. I just wondered to ask you to see if it would be quite an interesting program for me to listen to you talking to one of these guys.
Do you know what I'd love to do, Martin? Do you know what I'd love to do? And it's so difficult these days. I'd love to bring Eric on, for example. But I'd also like
That would be brilliant.
But I'd love to also, at the same time, bring on a researcher who disagrees with Eric, but who is happy to have an adult discussion about these things. So I could stay out of it because I don't have the knowledge. I could stay out of it and I could moderate the debate. I'd love to do that. But it's not bloody easy. Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah,
I'd love to hear that. I've been following you for years, so I love your show anyway. So
you're very kind.
It'd be fantastic to have somebody like that on, and just hear how they can speak their piece and speak.
You had no interest in it yourself, but you saw some things that kind of piqued your interest. You started looking into it, and now you think there's definitely something more to it than meets the eye. That it's not so easy to dismiss. Yeah.
It took me a year to even look at it because I thought it was so ridiculous. I thought, I'm not going to get into looking at that. It's just silly.
Yeah.
And eventually I thought, well, it's going so viral on the internet. I thought, right, I'm going to debunk this. I'm going to go on and I'm going to debunk this. But I couldn't.
You found it difficult to debunk it, right?
Because I'm an engineer by trade as well. So,
you're a logical man. You're somebody who uses logic at work, yeah.
Yeah. Because I looked at the mathematics of it and all the kind of stuff that came out, and I thought, no, this is strange. Because I used to work on with a military aircraft navigation systems and stuff like that in my past anyway. So I was looking back into my past and I was thinking, well, the military aircraft, the F-16s and F-18s and stuff, they didn't have 3D computer systems on the planes. They worked on a two-dimensional moving map display system. And I thought, well, how can you navigate the planet, which is supposedly a sphere?
Yeah.
You can't do it on a three-dimensional, unless you've got Google Earth, but it doesn't have Google Earth. They didn't have computers on the planes at the time. And I worked on these planes. This is back in the late 70s, early 80s. So there was no computers on the planes, of just a very basic moving map display system, which I worked on. So that brought me to that.
So you think it should have been impossible to navigate then? Can I ask you this? And this is not a gotcha question. I'm not trying to catch you out here. This is a genuine question. Like when they've done these stunts, like where they've sent a guy up to the atmosphere to do the biggest high altitude low opening dive and all that, and these guys go up, like I think Red Bull have done stuff like that, Red Bull the drinks company, and the photographs do show, or appear to show anyway, that they're on the edge of a curved earth. Do you think, and this is not a gotcha, I'm not trying to embarrass you at all, I wouldn't dare do that, I'm delighted you're on the show, do you think that stuff is being faked, that sort of footage and stuff?
Well, they were using a fisheye lens for a start, but then that Red Bull, I looked into that Red Bull footage, and if you look, there's two sides to that. The camera that he's using is obviously it's got a curvature of the Earth, but yet inside he's got another camera, and it sees a different perspective, sees a flat. So and there's two systems, two camera systems there. The Red Bull thing's been debunked as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, that's aside the point.
No, hang on, I'm delighted to have you on. Hang on, I'm delighted you're on. I really am. So you've obviously done some research. So let me ask you a couple of questions. And again, these are not gotcha questions. If it is flat then, is it in some sort of a box? Like, is there some end to it? Or does it go on forever if it's flat? Does it stop somewhere?
Well, nobody knows. I mean, this is the thing.
Yeah.
Somebody like Eric Dubai, or Dubai, I can't mind how you pronounce his name, but he'll say that it's not known because you can't go further than the Arctic, below 60 degrees of the Arctic Circle. You're not allowed to go to the Antarctic. So you don't know how, if it is flat, you don't know how much the land extends. Nobody knows, and none of the flat earthers know how far it extends, if it does extend. So that, and none of them profess that they know. They don't say, well, you know, you drop off at the end or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So they're honest about that. And I'm quite honest about it as well, because I don't know either.
Yeah.
When I look out to the sea, say, I live in Edinburgh, so if I go to the coast and I look out on the east coast and I see the sea, the horizon in the sea, you can't see Norway from Scotland. All you see is the level of the sea, and it's perfectly flat for many, many miles, hundreds of miles. And that's just not possible if you follow the narrative.
If it's a curve. Now, it's funny you say that, Martin. Martin in Edinburgh is on the line, by the way. It's good to have Martin on. It's funny you say that, because some people who do not believe the Earth is flat, so people who believe the Earth is a globe, they've done these experiments where they've used telescopes and stuff to try and see Blackpool Tower, but they can't. And they should be able to see it, but they can't. And so I take your example on face value, but then you've got other guys who say the Earth is round and I can prove it because we should be able to see Blackpool Tower or the Eiffel Tower or whatever, but we can't. So, you see, I don't know what to believe. But I'm not just saying this to patronise you. I mean this. You're kind of piquing my interest a little bit here now, to be honest.
No, I'm
kind of getting into this.
Now, so. I've heard all these arguments before, all these discussions. I've heard them all. And, I can understand why people believe that or believe that kind of prognosis. But people don't understand perspective, the eyes, the perspective, even with telescopes. I can zoom in with my fancy camera to a ship going over the horizon, allegedly, and it disappears. And yet I can zoom in and it appears again because it's not going over the horizon. It's because my eyes can only see so many miles before it goes into the vanishing point, as they say, kind of thing. And that's just the way the eyes work for some reason, and our eyes work. And so you have to have a telescope or something to zoom in, and then it appears again. And there's many cases where you can see Chicago from, I don't know how many miles away, from another part of, is it New York, wherever. You can look across the, and you can see the Chicago, all the buildings in Chicago from miles away. And if you follow the narrative of what they give us,
you shouldn't be able to.
About the circumference of the Earth and how much
Martin, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm not giving you the brush off. I'm not. I've got Julia standing by and I've got other callers standing by.
No,
I'm going to give you a commitment. Probably January, I will reach out to Eric Dubois. That's a promise, and invite him to come on. If he does his research into this program, he'll know that I won't be bringing him on to try and make a fool out of him. I'll bring him on for a friendly conversation. So I'll do
that.
He's a nice
guy anyway. I mean, he's a lovely guy.
Yeah, I watched something. I watched a presentation some years ago by him, if I remember. So that's an absolute guarantee. I'll do that, and I'll get into it. No, mate, it's lovely to chat with you, Martin.
All right, thanks a lot, Richie.
And Merry Christmas, buddy. Not at all. And you too, thanks so much. Martin there in Edinburgh, who's got an engineering background and didn't have any time for theories about the Earth being flat, but he started looking into it himself and has not only determined that there's something in it, he believes that it might very well be true, that the Earth even might very well be flat. Thanks to Martin for that. I appreciate that. Julia is standing by. She's been very patient. Let's get her on. And I can see a few of you sniggering there now. Ah, Richie has to do the flat earth thing. And somebody has said that I ridiculed. I never ridiculed anybody. I've never ridiculed anybody. I've joked about these things, but in a friendly way. Never ridiculed anybody. How are you, Julia? Welcome back. Are you well?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm not too shabby. When did we last speak? I reckon it's quite a while ago, is it?
It was way over a year ago, wasn't it?
And
all the mandates were coming in, and fortunately they did a U-turn because they realised they'd had no staff.
You're bang on. We did. That's when it was. We were still either in, or we were just about being released from one lockdown or another. But I'm going to wait for this now, Julie. I'm going to put my fingers on my temples. I'm going to rub my temples and I'm going to check if my memory is still intact. You worked, or you do work, in social care. Am I right?
I do, yeah. I work with teenagers and young adults with autism and similar conditions. I used to work in care homes as well, so I've kind of done both ends of the spectrum in terms of age.
Jogged me memory. I'm glad I got that right. Yeah, I do. I remember you well. We had a brilliant call. Listen, welcome back. What would you like to say?
Thanks. A bit of a Debbie Downer, considering it's Christmas. But it was just about kind of the conversation that you had yesterday about euthanasia.
Yeah.
And I used to be really, really pro-euthanasia. And there was a very specific reason for that, which is where the Debbie Downer comes in that my mum died of cancer when I was 15. She was only 40 as well. And I remember seeing her. And I don't think she would have gone down the euthanasia route because my mum's side of the family are Irish. When I remember seeing that and how horrific that was to see, obviously, as a sort of 14, 15-year-old seeing a parent die that awfully, I, from that age, I was right, OK, euthanasia needs to be a thing because, you know, if you get to that stage when you're in so much agony that the painkillers don't really work, you should have the right to end it. And it's nothing that you've actually said, but because of what I'm seeing going on in Canada, I think it's, my memory's dreadful. I'm on so many tablets at the moment. I think it's possibly New Zealand, but a couple of the different sort of so-called developed countries with euthanasia, I'm finding it horrifying now. And I'm thinking, Jesus, if that came in here to that level, would some of the kids I look after who are having just a bit of a shitty few days or few weeks or a bit down and depressed, would they be sort of saying to them, oh, you know, just end it. It's all right, you know.
Or talked into it. That's a very good point. So they might go and sit with the doctor and the doctor might say, well, okay, well, yeah, we can talk about that, rather than that doctor say, listen, don't be talking like that. We'll get you some help. Yes, you're right, Julia. Yeah.
And that's what really concerns me now, is if this was solely, if euthanasia was solely aimed at people that were in absolute agony with a terminal illness or had like really bad dementia and things like that, and I've seen that and I've looked at that and I've said to myself, I am never bloody going into a care home. You're not getting me in there. It's not happening. And it's not to say that some of the care homes I've worked in that they have residents haven't been looked after. It's just the lack of dignity and I just couldn't do it.
Do you know what I think? I think we might have touched on this when we spoke a year ago. I think that the vocational type people, the matronly type women, I spoke about these women on this program before. I've been in radio for so many years and going out to places, always going out to hospitals and places, especially around Christmas time and stuff. And I met people, I think you're one of them, made for it, because they just have nothing but love in them. And nothing bothers them, you know, the blood and the spit and the shite, none of that bothers them. They just love people. They're made for it. I think we don't have as many of those people anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's reducing. I mean, I have to say I don't do, which was why I kept my job. I don't do personal care. And then when I worked in care homes, there was actually activity, so I didn't actually do a great deal of personal care there.
Yeah.
So I have to say, because I'm not very good with bodily fluids, I do have to kind of clear up after self-harm and stuff now and then. I'm not great with it. So
no,
I,
me neither.
I have hats off to the people that do it, like literally that's their sole thing, because I do kind of more of the emotional kind of side of it rather than the bodily fluids, thankfully.
Hey Julia, back to euthanasia, right? That story in Canada where the paraplegic lady who was in the military. My missus and myself were talking about this, and she's a beautiful soul, my missus. Her chin is on the floor. You know, she only heard about this yesterday when listening to this program. How do you get to that in society where you say to a lady, you know, there are services end of life that you might want to look at, because she's asking for a stair. The fact she's asking for a stair lift might be some indication that she wants to carry on living.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, whipped. It's disgusting. And to be honest, what worries me looking back over my life, I've not, like, quite a few of my friends say to me that I'm the unluckiest person that they know, and I've just turned the big 50, unfortunately.
Congratulations.
Well, over summer, and I have not been, but like my health is awful, and I have, I think it's now 4 conditions, and basically when I got to 30, I got really, really sick. And I was in agony every month, and I was literally passing out, throwing up. I actually thought I had cancer, like my mum. I thought, that's it, I'm a goner. Got literally, like these vaccine-injured people, I got ghosted. Doctors were like, no, it's, you know, you just need some counselling, you're imagining it. I ended up being stage 4 endometriosis. I ended up remortgaging my flat that I just bought, to pay for surgery, because the surgery wait was ridiculous.
Hang on, Julia. 1,000 apologies for interrupting you. But these doctors who gave you the brush off, did they not have some exposure? You know,
Endometriosis, to be honest, it's the average wait for diagnosis of endometriosis is 7 years. And I have to say, I mean, I volunteer for a charity, and I have to say that in the 20 years that since I first got diagnosed, I don't see anything changing, to be honest. I mean, they are saying that they're changing the diagnosis, because diagnosis used to have to be through surgery, although mine was so bad it got picked up on an ultrasound, because I just had massive cysts on my ovaries. So it was just, I mean, I'd lost a massive amount of weight. I was like under 8 stone, but I looked like I was pregnant. And I've had loads and loads of surgeries for that. I got to 40. At the same age as 30, I got diagnosed with congenital scoliosis. Nobody had picked it up. Obviously, congenital, you think they'd have picked it up when I got born, but no. Obviously, these days with ultrasound, that would have been picked up. And I was told to exercise. So although I was in agony, when I had the better days, I would exercise. I got to 40 and I bent over one day and I thought, oh, shit. And I knew what it was. I could feel bone grinding on bone. And I eventually got diagnosed with osteoarthritis on my spine. And they're like, oh, don't worry, just a bit of physiotherapy, you'll be fine. And I was like, no, I've broken something.
But that's negligence. When you tell them what has happened and they don't perform, that's why I said, is there some exposure along the line there, because it sounds to me like there probably is.
The thing is trying to sue is almost impossible. Trying to sue on the NHS or in this country, it's literally, you try it. I've tried it and it doesn't.
Can you explain that a little bit further? Why is it so hard? Is it because solicitors won't take it up? Is it barristers? How is it so difficult?
I think it's because it takes so long. So unless it's an out and out obvious, your chances. I mean, I've got one family member that did manage to sue successfully. Well, she's long dead. And that was my aunt. And that was one of the it was a smear test scandal years ago where they read the smear test as of quite a few women as negative when it was positive. So by the time she went back 5 years later, my aunt was riddled with cancer and it was too late. But yeah, in terms of like, I think there's a lot of people who have sort of experienced what most people consider negligent and would be negligent if you're in the States. And just trying to get anywhere here is impossible. So I ended up having two massive spinal surgeries at the age of 42.
Jesus.
And I've got basically my spine screwed. And then just 2 weeks ago, I ended up with this horrendous pain in my face for over like 6 weeks. And they were going to refer me to ENT, and I was going to like pay to go private because I get some help from work. And then I thought, this isn't ENT, this is something else. This is like neurological. So I like Googled, where are the nerves in the face? Because I started like feeling like it wasn't just a pain in my face when I touched it. It was one side, very specific. And then I had agony in my ear. So I felt like I had an ear infection. Then I felt like I had multiple teeth infections. And to cut long strokes short, this time, because I kind of pointed them in the right direction and said, this is neuralgia, not ENT. And the GP that I phoned that day happened to have seen one person with it before, because it's very rare. I got diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia, which is also called the suicide disease because it's so painful.
Christ almighty. Jimmy, I'm really sorry to hear this.
My point is, with all of this over the years, I've obviously, you can imagine you're going through surgery, you're going through shit at work because you've had too much time off, you're losing money, you're in debt because you're having to pay for this, pay for that, because the NHS hasn't been fit for purpose for over 20 years and it obviously has got worse. And I'm looking at what's going on in Canada and these other places, and I'm thinking, if Canada was the UK 20 years ago, I would have probably been dead for 10, 15 years, because I would have gone down that route.
You think you would have gone down that route? And the government is going to look into this early next year. They're going to look into drafting a bill.
Yeah. I think I would have very possibly gone down that route. And the thing is, I mean, it's like, I'd like to give that message to the vaccine injury, because you see so many on Twitter saying that, you know, they want to end it, or they've just known somebody who's, you know, really suicidal. And the thing is that it is, it's horrible being ill. Of course it is. It's horrible being in pain. It's horrible, the other things that come with it, that people don't realise how bad it is. People kind of say, oh, it can't be that bad, and kind of, you know, fob it off and everything. But there are still beautiful things in life, whether that's, you know, lovely food, great friends, sitting by a warm fire, which I am at the moment, you know, traveling, whatever it is, every, you know, different things, different horses for courses kind of thing, you know, it's different, or even different courses for horses. It doesn't matter. And I'd have missed out on those things, and I'd have missed out on meeting some amazing people and doing traveling to some amazing countries. And I'm just looking at this bill now, and I'm just thinking how many people with like an illness, or not just an illness, how many people that are down on their luck and their skin and they're fed up and they're like, I can't bloody make the rent again. My credit card debts are X, Y, Z. How many people are going to go down that route?
And they tell you it's painless. They tell you it's absolutely painless. Don't worry about it. I hear you. You said this was a Debbie Downer call. It's not. That's the most inspirational thing I've heard for days, to be honest. You saying that despite dealing with neuralgia, Jesus, Mary and Holy Saint Joseph, I mean, to be dealing with that and endometriosis and the pain, and you're still saying life is beautiful, the world is beautiful, people are beautiful. That's inspirational. There's nothing Debbie Downer about that. Let me ask you, because time is going to run out pretty quickly. As far as the pain and the neuralgia goes, are you looking at complementary things, you know, like healing and stuff? Have you gone down that road or have you looked at it?
I have gone down some of the healing road. I mean, the big thing, I mean, the most pain that I've had for the last 10 years is the fact that I've got osteoarthritis in my spine. And when they went in, they actually discovered I'd fractured multiple pedicles. I go to the chiropractor religiously every month. And I think if I didn't go, I don't think I'd work.
And does that help? Does that help? Yeah. It does obviously help.
Yeah. I'm in pain, I do make sure I do make sure that I go for walks. I make sure that I'm active, try and keep my weight down. So my weight's just on the healthy BMI, just. I did do a one day healing course like years ago. Some things I've tried have been fantastic. Other things like acupuncture did nothing. The other thing I think that I get annoyed that people really fob off is nutraceuticals. I take the Zelenko protocol stuff. I've got my dad on that. We're the only ones in our family that haven't had COVID. Because we're both out and about. Obviously, I'm in a risky job. Why have neither of us had COVID? And that's the only kind of thing that I can think about. Whereas the rest of the family have all had it, some of them twice.
Well, hang on a second now. Just what Dean said. So do you have a little bit of sympathy with Dean in Lancashire? Dean said he doesn't believe it exists.
I don't know. Who knows? Are we ever going to find out?
No, that's the thing.
I do think something's making people ill. But is it COVID? Is it just the amount of toxins and shite in the environment?
And non-ionizing radiation and stuff like that. I've just got to tell you, we've got about 40 seconds. So I'm going to give you the final 40 seconds because I've got to close it down then. But Julia, great, just a great inspiration. I'm not going to feel sorry for myself tomorrow or Saturday or Sunday. I'm not.
Worse people off than me. The way I look at it. I look at, you've got people this Christmas that, you know, little kids that aren't going to get a present on that, which is heartbreaking. Which is why I say you have to kind of look on the bright side of things. You know, there is always a bright side to things. People need to look at the little things rather than the bigger things.
It's a pleasure speaking to you today. Great bringing up the euthanasia and referencing your mum and seeing that when you were 15 and then saying that you would have been there yourself if it had been here 15 years ago. Just brilliant, Julia. Look, stay in touch because I'd like to continue these conversations with you again in the future. Brilliant to have you on. Have a great weekend and thanks for sharing your time with us tonight. Thank you, Julia.
No worries. Take care.
You
thanks.
Too. Bye. Bye-bye. For now. Julia on the line to us. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to Dean and to Martin, of course. Dean in Lancashire, Martin in Edinburgh. That's it for today. Got to close it out now to wrap it up for 2 hours to get it on the, say it for me, on the podcast. That's right. I'll be back with you on Sunday for Sunday Morning Melodies, a totally different programme at 10 o'clock UK time. I will see you there. Until then, look after yourselves and one another and do have an absolutely tip-top weekend. And if I'm playing a live song, I don't want to play a live song, I can't do that. I'm not going to close out with a live song. If you are watching the England game on Saturday, England play France in the World Cup quarterfinal, enjoy it. Okay? Okay, see you Sunday. Bye.